you have studied any of the non-exact sciences, by which I mean sociology, anthropology, linguistics, and others, you are familiar with the words dynamic and static. Static means not static electricity, but that something is unmoving, it does not change. Dynamic means not that someone has a charismatic personality, but that a thing changes a lot. Language is dynamic. We speak the English language, and you know if you have been to England or know British people, we don't talk like them. The accent of our language, a lot of our vocabulary, has changed over time. Maybe you're aware that Webster doesn't still publish dictionaries very often anymore, but on their dictionary website, they publish annually a report of new words, words that have become part of our language that are not in the dictionary. In the year 2018, I chose just a few of the new words in the American English language. Perhaps you'll know some of these, others maybe not. Mocktail, do you know what a mocktail is? Mocktail is a cocktail that does not have alcohol in it. Zoodle, who knows what a zoodle is? Nothing to do with things at the zoo. It's a noodle made out of zucchini. Rando, adorbs, fave. These are slang by the young people that mean random, adorable, and favorite. Fintech, probably we have a few techies here who know what fintech is, or biohacking, or haptics. Bingeable. That's a show on Netflix or some other streaming thing that has enough things that you can lay down on the couch and binge and watch that show for an entire day, have a binge. It's non-caloric, by the way. Did you know that cultures, like language, are dynamic, not static? Our culture changes. If you come to Hope regularly, you hear your pastor talk about this. And as Christian people, we should be attuned to those changes. Not quickly. Cultures change and morph, though slowly. One of the sad hallmarks to me of our culture, don't know if this is true around the world, I've only been in a few cultures in my life, but of this culture right now, North America, we are morphing into a very ungrateful culture. Many people do not know what it means to be thankful. We criticize easily, we tear down easily. We talked in the Sunday school hour this morning about cancel culture. We rarely edify and express honor and thank others. Monday night of this week, I went to our townhouse association meeting. And I wondered going out the door, why am I going to this meeting? Jolie didn't say anything, but I know she was wondering, Tim, what are you doing going to that meeting again? We have a board that rules over the association of 86 homes that are part of Walden Town Home Association in Burnsville. And we have a budget and people need to meet. And we elected a board for next year. It's a pretty unhappy meeting. I wish it wasn't. People are just amazingly caustic. I would think in an association of 86 homes, 86 people ought to be there, or 100. But it's usually about 15 or 20. And the reason I only go three or four times a year, and that most people don't come, I think, is they're just tired of snarkiness and people criticizing. And when I got in my car to go home, I realized this is why I went to the meeting, to say thank you. Because I'm trying to change the culture. We have a neighbor, a resident who volunteers her time, a lot of time, to keep our grounds looking nice. She goes to courses to study how to get rid of buckthorn and how to beautify things. And Jolie and I participate in cleanup days and beautification days, and she just does amazing work. And amazing to me is that people criticize her work. And I just said at the end of the meeting, when she gave a report, Norma, thank you. Our grounds look so much better this year. I really appreciate your work. I said that to David when he gave the financial report and the person who did the nominating committee work. All these people serve with no compensation or stipend. And I just realized they just must feel total lack of gratitude from the neighbors that they are serving. I doubt I changed the culture, but I'm going to keep trying. But it bugs me so much, I'm not going to try every month. I'm going to keep going a few times. This story perhaps is not about a lack of gratitude, but it might seem that way on the surface. So leprosy. I doubt that you have known someone in your life, a neighbor, a colleague, a family member who has leprosy. I don't know of leprosy colonies here in the United States, in Brazil, where we lived for a long time. I am aware of a community that's in the state of São Paulo, the state we lived in, but is distant and rural and is intended to keep these people away from the general population because 2,000 years later, there's still not an effective treatment for it. And it still remains amazingly contagious. You've heard the saying, misery loves company. I try not to live as a miserable person, so I don't know if that really works out, but I have occasionally thought to myself, that seems perhaps to be true right there. Isn't it amazing that despair can be a powerful equalizer? So if you read John chapter 4 in John's gospel, it tells the story of Jesus coming into a village in Samaria with his disciples. It was midday, about time to eat. The disciples went into this village to buy food to eat, and Jesus sat down by the well, and a Samaritan woman came to draw water. And Jesus said, "Give me some water to drink." And she was amazed that he would speak to her in public, a man speaking to a woman. That would not have happened so much in their culture. And him being a Jew would speak to her as a Samaritan. And it says in John 4, verse 9, these words of explanation, because we don't get that. And it says, because Jews do not associate with Samaritans. Parable of the Good Samaritan, one of the more well-known of Jesus' parables. The surprise factor in that story is not that a human being would stop and help a human being in need, but that the man who had been assaulted and was left for dead at the side of the road was Jewish. And other Jews passed by, and because they would risk their own safety, after all, the one who assaulted him hiding in the rocks might come out and still be hiding and assault them. And so three could be compassionate Jews with their fellow man continued on and felt justified in ignoring that need. But who stooped to help was a Samaritan. And Jesus knew in the story that there was a surprise factor, because all the listeners would know, these people don't associate with each other. I want to make this very clear. The Bible reports to us things that it does not teach. The Bible reports this aversion that Jews and Samaritans had, but it doesn't defend it. It's not saying this is right, it's okay, that was fine for them to be that way. This aversion was not from God. Israel was told, if you know the Old Testament, to keep itself spiritually pure. They were told not to adopt the other religions, the gods of pagan people. For a time, they were told not to intermarry with other people for spiritual purity. And yet, the whole purpose of the Jewish people, this is from Genesis 12, the calling of Abraham, was to bless the world. So you'll understand this is a tough thing to balance. Keep yourself kind of separate from the rest of the world. Bless the world. You would think those kind of contradict each other a little bit, right? That's a tough balance. But hatred for another people group was not obedience to God, nor were feelings of superiority. So we shouldn't read the Good Samaritan parable or this story and think, well, that's okay. So Jewish men, these Jewish men, lepers, would not have normally hung around Samaritans. If they were healthy, they would not have. But these men had leprosy. Now, text doesn't say there were 9 Jewish lepers and 1 Samaritan. Might have been 6 and 4 or some mixed group. But it does say that one at least was a Samaritan man. So they might have concluded, well, now that we're contaminated, now that we have the worst possible thing we could have in life, so what if we hang around together? Right? We're not going to catch anything from each other. We're all lepers. Luke says that Jesus and the 12 were walking on the border between Samaria and Galilee. So if you don't care about geography, you can just ignore this 30-second explanation. Between the Mediterranean Sea and the Jordan River was this skinny little thing called Israel. Judea, where most of the New Testament happens, Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Nazareth, the cities we know, is in the south called Judea. Galilee, where Jesus and the disciples are from, is further north, and in the middle is a land called Samaria. What does it mean to be a Samaritan? By the way, we don't think there was a border there like we have borders. Not like you're driving south on 35 and there's not a sign, "Welcome to Iowa." Okay? But people know where Samaria and Galilee are in their minds. What are Samaritans? That's actually a more difficult question to answer. It's not answered very clearly in the scriptures. And biblical scholars would say there was a half-breed, people who were born from a marriage of a Jew to someone who was not Jewish. But in fact, a large part of the inhabitants of this area, region called Samaria, were from a few, two or three of the 12 Jewish tribes. You remember that in John 4, this woman, the Samaritan woman, said to Jesus, "Our ancestors worshipped on Mount Gerizim." She said on the mount, but she meant the mountain called Gerizim. "And we know that you Jews say the place to worship God is in Jerusalem." That was not, in fact, part of the Jewish faith. Jews said they should worship God everywhere, and they had synagogues in every village. But for certain things, they had to go to the temple, in fact, in Jerusalem. That was one of the main differences that we should understand, were some religious differences in the scriptures. So I read this Old Testament instruction. If you're a leper, to protect other people, you have to stay a distance. And imagine the social ostracization that, because from a distance people couldn't necessarily tell there are lepers. If you don't know about leprosy, it affects the extremities. So toes, fingers, nose, ears, chin, anything in the extremity of the body would start to decompose and would turn white and would eventually fall off. And so people would look grotesque as the disease advanced. But so that others would know, they were to shout out. Imagine living your life when felt someone got into the danger zone, and you have to shout out, "Unclean! Hey, don't come near me." But these men, though they can't get close to the rest of the population, have been close enough to see miracles done, people healed, to hear the teaching of Jesus, to know that this is a miracle worker. They know he's the answer. They call him Master in verse 13. Jesus, they know his name. "Master, have pity on us." They're asking to be healed from this horrible disease. This group of men who apparently spend time together, what do you think they talk about? Their despair. Maybe the love and justice of God. Look at all these people in the population who don't or are not afflicted with this horrible disease. Why did this happen to us? Don't infirm people who have diseases, especially if they're considered incurable, don't they ask those philosophical questions? Well, the people treating me, they don't have this disease. What makes them better than me? Why did God think I should be afflicted with this? I don't think these men spend time debating where to worship. Do you suppose they talked about that? "Well, you're Samaritan. You say we should go to Mount Gerizim. We say you ought to go to Jerusalem." They can't go to either one. They're lepers. The Samaritan leprous man can't go to Mount Gerizim because there's worship of people up there. The Jewish lepers, they can't go to the temple. They're not allowed in proximity with other people. Jesus says to them, go show yourself to the priests. That's in Leviticus chapter 14, very, very lengthy instructions about how people who had been healed, it doesn't say how they'd be healed of infectious skin diseases, leprosy is just one of those, that if they were healed, they had to be declared healed officially by the priest. Maybe you read the newer Old Testament and think, that's a pretty sweet job to be a priest. It's not manual labor. You just greet people. You don't even have to know their names. You don't do counseling. People don't tell you their problems. They just come and confess their sins, and you pretend not to be scandalized by what they're confessing. And they bring you got this tough part. You got to slit the throat of some animal, and you do a lot of grilling meat. You just put the stuff on top of the fire. And people give you the meat to eat afterwards. How tough can this be? So read Leviticus 14, and you're not going to be covetous about the job of a priest. So people with diseases, there's a whole thing there about mildew, and if someone has mildew on their clothing or their tent, they got to bring it to the priest. That would be a great day, wouldn't it? And they have to inspect people who have infectious diseases. And I don't think really that's the thing we want, is it? Show yourself to the priest. I think the Samaritan man would not have known what that meant. But the Jewish men in this group knew. And go show yourself to the priest, they would have known those words. This means we're being cleansed. And as they went, they were cleansed. They were healed. They would have known immediately. As they saw their fingers and their extremities being restored. But the Samaritan man would have thought, why go to the temple? I'm a foreigner. I'm not welcome there. That commandment is not for me. I'm not Jewish. So he turns around. Is he disobeying the order Jesus gave him? Didn't he say, go show yourself to the priest? And who is he showing himself to? You know what it says in Hebrews 4 and chapter 7 and 8? The high priest. He knows Jesus is a healer, a miracle worker. Does he know it's the Son of God, that he's the high priest that will intercede for us? And he threw himself at Jesus' feet. They obey the rules of society, don't they? Verse 13, it says, they called out to Jesus in a loud voice. This is how lepers had to act. Be sure they were heard. And now he's right up close to Jesus, and he's doing what? Verse 15. He's praising God in a loud voice. He hasn't turned down the volume of his leprous life. But he gets close. He realizes the rule about the distance is over. He throws himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And instead of saying, you're welcome, Jesus says, weren't all 10 of you healed? Where are the other 9? The man doesn't offer an answer. He might have been thinking, who cares? They're not my friends. We're just hanging around because we're all sick. Not sure what he thought about that. What's going to happen after he thanks Jesus? What's happening to these 9 after they get to the priests? Now, from Galilee to Jerusalem, I said it was a long distance. Probably they did not go to the temple. That might have been a couple-day walk for them. Probably they went to find a priest in a local place of worship or synagogue. The answer is they're going home. The healing has brought restored relationship. These leprous men haven't been home since they were discovered with this disease. They haven't seen their wives. They haven't seen their children. They haven't worked their job. They haven't seen their neighbors or their parents. They haven't been to market. They haven't been to synagogue. They haven't been anywhere except staying a distance and screaming out unclean. And all of life has changed with their healing. We don't think about that much, we redeemed people, do we? When we were living in our sin before coming to Christ, much more unclean, much more unable to walk into the presence of a holy God than a leper that couldn't go into the temple. But we didn't walk around shouting in a loud voice, "I'm sinful, it's contagious, don't come near me." Is sinful, is a sinful lifestyle contagious? Should start with the first words of the book of Psalms. Psalm 1 starts with the word blessed, happy. But it gets eventually the psalm to how to live in happiness, to live in peace with God, to live in the Word, to live by the streams of cool water. But it starts with what not to do. And it says, blessed is the one who does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly or stand in the way of sinners. And here's a verse for 2019. And who does not sit in the seat of the scornful, of mockers. If you had asked me today, what's the thing that's destroying, that's undermining, that's making our culture toxic? I think it is this, the third phrase of Psalm 1, verse 1, that many people choose to sit in the seat of the scornful. And here's what happens there. It's a big surprise. They become mockers. When you hang around with them, this is what happens. Is your life contagious in a good sense? Thanksgiving's just a great week to think about that. Are you thankful in a way that others would look and say, well, I should try that. Why in the horrible world we live in is this person hopeful and grateful? And who are they really thanking? Here's another takeaway from this passage. Do you get close to hurting people like Jesus did? Because we have the same reaction of society in the face of leprosy. Well, people can find a salve to put on something, or a doctor will give a treatment, or take a medication, or something else. There's other things that aren't medically treatable, and we just tend to stay away, don't we? If you're going to bless the hurting, you need to get close. 1 out of 10, it's like a tithe, isn't it? Honestly, if we managed to say thank you to God and other people for 1/10 of the blessings we have, I think we would get tired of saying thank you. Because we're just that excessively blessed, are we not? So there's a goal for the end of 2019. Let's grow a bit in that, shall we? Where am I going to start, Pastor? Why don't you start where you worship? Have you expressed gratitude to people at your church this week? People who lead you in worship? People who sit in the booth and make sure the sound and video are working? Or the person who's our office manager or our custodian or who serve in the nursery, who teach your children, who mow our lawn, who shovel our snow? Be thankful to others. And Luke 17 should remind us. And be sure to thank God as well. Amen. Stand with me. Let's pray together.